Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 9 of the Baywatch podcast. I am one of your hosts, Mr. Span. I'm joined here by my lovely wife tonight, Mrs. Span. Say what's up to the people, baby.
Hi.
Well, that was quick there, boy. Like, straight to the point. And
But also, I just want to point out that you said my beautiful wife for tonight.
I didn't mean it that way. I mean, come on, babe. This is a forever thing. Like, I'm in it to win it. I'm in it for the long haul. Like, 100 years, all that stuff.
You already won it when you married me. All right, let's come on.
Okay, yeah. But we are reviewing again, Surviving R. Kelly. We watched episodes 3 and 4 tonight. And we're going to be kind of recapping it and giving some of our thoughts on what we saw tonight, some of the things that we learned tonight, and just kind of getting right back into it. And, you know, of course, we're going to be concluding this tomorrow night as they, you know, have the finale of that as well. But first things first, babe, I got to ask you. Well, before I do that, I got to remind you guys how to get in touch with us over here at this Baywatch podcast. Let your voices be heard. Go ahead and hit up that hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. We'll play them on the show. We'll respond right here on the show as well. You can also email us here at feedback@thebaywatchpodcast.com. That's feedback@thebaywatchpodcast.com. Leave us those emails. Of course, we'll read those emails and reply to you live here on the show as we do it. Hit us up on Twitter. My name on Twitter is Mr_Span, and yours is what?
Okay, so it is Podcast Bay, but apparently if you search for me, you may not be able to find me. There's some big burly dude that has that as his like display name. So yeah. If you just search Baywatch Podcast or like hashtag, you know, Baywatch.
BWPod?
Yeah, whatever. Well, I don't use that hashtag, so you might not find me if you search that. But if you search some form of like Baywatch podcast, you know, you'll see like our little, you know, it's like a little cartoon version of us. And that should be me.
Babe said, fuck that hashtag, nigga.
I mean, I wasn't trying to. Communication is key, because I didn't know that was a thing.
Well, I really like kind of keep it that way, like as a way to identify which shows people are listening to when they're like on the network feed. So it's just one way of kind of identifying that. But yo, Podcast Bay or the Baywatch Podcast on Twitter, hashtag, you know, that whole shit. Do that. Follow us on those Twitter streets, man, and chop it up with us as we talk about these movies and these TV shows and social media and everything else. Also, man, go to our website, www.thebaywatchpodcast.com. Go there. You can listen to replays of the show and vote in the polls when we put polls up. I actually am thinking about putting a poll up on the last episode of this particular series just to kind of get a general consensus on what people were thinking about after watching that. And yeah, we're going to get right into this. And I guess the first question I got for you, baby, tonight is, what did you think about tonight's episode? Like, did you learn anything new that you didn't know it before?
I mean, there was a lot of new material in this 2 episodes. I mean, I think most of the material in this tonight was new to me. You know, a great deal of the material, because a lot of it was like personal testimony and stuff and things that, you know, I'm not sure if anyone else had ever heard. Right, but right. So I think pretty much, you know, most of the information tonight was pretty new.
Yeah, I think for me, like the first part episode was an episode 3. That part, most of that was information that I had been like kind of privy to, because like that's when it really became a thing, like where it was like if you were in Chicago, you just knew about this stuff. It was all over the newspapers. It was all over like the local news. It was all over the radio stations. So you just kind of knew a lot of these things, like especially with the sex tape and the release of that. You know, it was just kind of like that part there was where I was like, yeah, I knew about pretty much all of that. But then going into episode 4, where Geronda Pace started giving, you know, her, you know, her personal story about what her experiences were with R. Kelly, that's where I was like, yo, man, it's like with this particular show, every time I think this shit can't get any worse, this show was like, hold my fucking beer.
Yeah.
Like, it just kept, like, it got worse. Like, man, like, damn, this is so fucked up. And, like, yeah, it's fucked up. One of the things I thought was like, kind of interesting, and I kind of wanted to, kind of highlight, was the availability of that sex tape. And there was a part in the series that I kind of wanted to kind of replay. So I got this pulled up here now. So let me pull this up and kind of hit that play button.
Thing is, they eventually bootleg copies of the tape start showing up around the country. People are watching it in clubs.
This tape was duplicated and was on for sale all over the South Side. So you could drive up to one of these outdoor flea markets and get a tape of R. Kelly, allegedly R. Kelly, having sex with an underage girl.
This is before the whole advent of sex tapes. And I think the tape came on VHS. As a matter of fact, it was a VHS tape.
That tape was rushed to me from Chicago. And looking at this tape, I'm like, oh. Ooh. Ooh. Robert has a problem.
A lot of people saw that P tape. It was circulating in the streets. It was like a bootleg that went around. I don't remember what I was thinking at that time, but I'm like, how did he get away with this?
All right. Did you ever see the tape?
Yeah. Okay, so this was 2002, so I was a sophomore in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And yep, I did see the tape. I saw it at a party, like a house
attention
party.
To you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And someone had it, you know, at a house party. They had, I think they probably had gotten it from like the barbershop, because that was like a big thing. Like when I used to get my hair done, you know, the DVD man would come in and like have tapes and whatever. So yeah, we all sat and watched it, and I don't remember how I felt. I remember being like jaw on the floor, shocked that he like had peed on that girl.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that specifically, but I don't really remember much else about seeing it. I remember being like, well, this is a lot. This is a lot to see, but you know.
So I too saw the tape. And I remember, like, I can remember, like, that tape, they talk about this shit being sold at flea markets. Like, you could be out in front of Jewel's, and that's a grocery store chain in Chicago, Jewel Osco. I never forget this shit, like, the one on 87th and the Dan Ryan. Like, there would be guys set up with, like, DVDs and all sorts of shit, like, right out in front of the fucking grocery store. Like, if you were riding on the Red Line, guys walking up and down the Red Line selling not only DVDs, but they'll sell you batteries and socks and shit, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can get this shit practically anywhere. And I remember, like, watching this tape, and it was the oddest fucking way to watch this tape.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because of who was in the room. I was watching this tape with my aunt, my uncle, and my grandma.
Oh, no. Not Granny.
Granny was in the room.
Yeah.
Granny was watching. And, like, I know a lot of people, like, a lot of R. Kelly defenders would say, well, what was you doing watching that tape? You were participating in child pornography and all this other stuff. But you have to understand, at the time, people were trying to figure out, was this nigga in this tape?
Yeah.
And that's what the overarching theme was. Like, well, what the fuck is, could there be any truth to the allegations that people are saying about it? Because it sounds crazy. It sounds too fucking unbelievable to be true. And then I got to see this shit for myself.
Yeah, I think when, you know, we were all, it was kind of like a kickback, like a party setting. And I think people turned it on initially, like on some, like, about to watch some porn or whatever. Maybe people want to get freaky.
Right.
But it ended up that we were all sitting there like, what, oh shit, like, this is nasty.
Yeah.
One thing that I do want to point out about that tape coming out. So the tape came out some early to mid 2002.
Yeah.
So in that same year, R. Kelly performed at the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. The Salt Lake City Winter Olympics.
I feel like it was not that, but okay.
I'm sure it was.
But he performed at the Olympics. Also, he won a Soul Train Music Award for his album Chocolate Factory, which came out in 2003. Mm-hmm. So he won a Soul Train Music Award for Best R&B Soul Album Male. The album debuted at number one on Billboard, sold 532,000 copies in its first week. Mm-hmm. And this is after the tape came out. Mm-hmm. This is while, you know, there's trial is being spoken of. There's cases, people are coming out and saying things, people are getting paid off, there's settlements out of court. All of this is going on, and my man's is still winning.
Oh yeah. Not like, you know, the interesting thing about, like, when they talk about the Chocolate Factory album coming out, like, he also had an album come out that was like, it got bootlegged so heavy that he couldn't release it. And that was that Loveland album.
Yeah.
And a lot of the tracks off that Loveland album ended up on that Chocolate Factory album. And, like, I can remember there being a thing where, like, even with this going on, even with this case going on, even with people seeing, you know, the tape and knowing that it was him, there was, you know, the prevailing attitude of a lot of people of, well, what was she doing there? And, you know, where was her parents? You know what I'm saying? And that attitude is, it kind of still persists to this day. But that was one of the prevailing things where, like, you know, they really weren't trying to, folks really weren't trying to, like, disinvest themselves of R. Kelly at that particular time.
No, I mean, and there were a lot of people that were blatantly, like, blaming the victims that did, you know, kind of come out and say what had happened to them. Mm-hmm. Like, the people that were, like, the fans that were coming to the trial to support him.
Yeah.
Like, there were, and people, you know, coming on the news camera, like, them little fast tail girls, and, you know, that is not him on that tape and stuff. Like, that had to be pretty. And people who say, like, oh, why are they just coming out now? Because of that. Like, imagine, like, you just went to the police or whoever, told your mom and dad, and they went to the police, and, you know, maybe you got a settlement or whatever happened. You told someone about this incident that happened to you, like, you were raped by R. Kelly, and then you turn on the 6 o'clock news, and you see someone yelling in the camera, like, fuck you, these bitches, these little fast-tail little girls, and they lying and this and the other, like, the way that must have made them feel is, like, it's awful.
Yeah, I've got a clip of a little bit of that here. Well, let me see if I can play that.
R. Kelly pleads not guilty. He goes straight to a Southside church. He goes straight to an event where he is admired by young children. Here he is being prosecuted for allegedly having sex with an underage girl, and ministers, civil rights leaders in the city of Chicago wanted to play up the side of him that did the I believe I can fuck, and not the side of him with the raunchy lyrics that kind of went along with possibly having sex with an underage girl. And it really speaks to the duplicity of R. Kelly.
And not only that, because I said something about this before, last night I talked about this, like, the prevailing attitude in Chicago about, like, a lot of the support that he gets. Like, you know, when you think about, like, all these churches that kind of, like, you know, helped lend a hand in keeping his image somewhat respectable within the community. When you think about how the radio stations within Chicago that refused to not stop, you know, to stop playing his music. When you think about the fact that he was still able to go to the 2002 Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City and perform at the opening ceremonies. Like there was this thing where, like, he had so much support that it would lend for a person who was a victim of something like this to be like, man, what's the point of me saying anything? And it's almost, you know, we talked about, well, we haven't, but, like, what's that? Bill Cosby. Like, some of the same things where people connect his music so much to, like, the important parts of their lives. They do the same thing with Bill Cosby. We're like, well, he made the Cosby Show, so, like, he couldn't have been doing these things.
I mean, I just think about all the people who, like, maybe had an R. Kelly song as, like, their first dance at their wedding. Mm. You know? Especially, like, you know, way before, like maybe like something off like his very first album or something. Even the people that still was like, okay, like the Aaliyah situation happened. And then, you know, right after that, maybe still had, I just think about those people that like before, like the shit really hit the fan. And mm-hmm. now it's like their, I don't know, 20th anniversary and they can't even dance to their song because it's like, well, this is, gotta pick some new shit. Like, this is a damper.
But the interesting thing about that, though, is that a lot of those people probably won't even bother trying to pick some more shit. They're like, man, fuck it. This is what it was.
I mean, yeah, yes. But I know of a few that are like, we had to pick a whole other song. Like, we couldn't even. They had to pick a whole, like, they couldn't even. And they got married when people were still videotaping, like, you know, camcordering things.
The Panasonic shoulder. Yeah,
drill. And they're like, we can't even play. She was said she can't even play her wedding tapes because it was that, you know, it was that time. Yeah. There was a plethora of R. Kelly jams at the reception, like her walking down the aisle, like all this stuff. And she's just like, I don't even want to think about it as that associated with my wedding. Like,
right.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Pretty terrible.
Now, another thing that I thought was interesting was, this nigga's brother, man.
Which one?
Bruce, the one that's locked up with the fucking AccuView contact lenses in the jail.
Those are not contacts.
Hey, I'm just saying.
He's clearly holding his glasses.
That don't mean shit.
Those are not contacts.
That nigga probably got some plain ass colored contacts with no prescription in them.
You can't have that in jail.
Hey, he R. Kelly brother. Maybe he's getting some perks and shit. I mean, that's a whole lot of shit that I was surprised niggas get in jail. Like, I was surprised niggas be sitting in jail with, like, cable and shit. Like,
yeah,
and, like, it's a thing.
Phones, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, but the stuff that he said.
No, but, like, I thought it was, like, I get being supportive of family. I get, you know, not wanting to see, like, your family torn down and shit. But, like, the inclusion of his brother, Bruce, kind of lends you to believe, like, man, maybe, like, I kind of want to know what the fuck Bruce is locked up for.
I know, and I try to look it up, and it's too much of a common name. Like, there's people, and if I could figure out where he was, it would be easy to find out. But
yeah,
I think that they purposely didn't, like, they didn't say where he was because people would be able to look up his record, but. I just tried to generally, like, what is R. Kelly's brother, like, locked up for, but yeah. I could not find anything, so.
Because he makes way too many motherfucking excuses for the things that are going on. And there was one part where I believe they were talking about R. Kelly's brother, Carrie, where R. Kelly was trying to assert that it may have been Carrie in the sex tape and not him. And Bruce is like, well, Robert was trying to, like, get him to,
do a deposition with the lawyer.
I got that clip. Hold on. Let me pull that up. I got that clip. 2128. Yeah. Here we go.
Gary, to tell the truth, do a deposition with his attorneys that the things that he was saying was not true. And he said, if you do this deposition with my attorneys, I will give you $100,000 and a one record contract deal. I'll never understand that as long as I live. You could have been rich. I'll never understand that.
All right, so. He couldn't understand why Carrie wouldn't want to, like, just basically sign his life away for $100,000 and a record. he's talking about you could have been rich. Nigga, $100,000 ain't a lot of fucking money, man.
No.
It's not.
And it wasn't at the time that we're talking about.
And it ain't now.
So, you could tell that Bruce is kind of like, everyone had... Oh, you have uncles like this.
I do.
The uncle that, like, was almost famous, or, like, the uncle that was, like, part of a famous entourage, kind of, by association a little bit, sideways, mm-hmm. around the back. Mm-hmm. Like, that uncle that...
My own daddy.
Well, that kind of like that uncle that he gets invited to the family barbecue, but he ain't the one in the sandals cooking. Like, you know, he gets invited, but like he kind of be in the back with a Miller High Life.
Yeah,
you know, or the one that everybody kind of rolls their eyes at. He's like that uncle.
Yeah.
It's just, he's just awful. He can stay right where he is.
I low-key believe that maybe, like, as much shit as Bruce has been talking about, you know, like, the entire process that Robert Kelly's been going through, like, I low-key kind of feel like he may have been complicit in also facilitating that R. Kelly got to some young girls, or maybe even participated in that himself. Of course, I don't have anything to prove that with. I'm just saying that in the ways in which he's articulating himself on this particular show, like, you would look at him and the way he's conducting himself, even behind bars, and the way he's talking about this, like, he sees absolutely nothing wrong with the shit that R. Kelly is being accused of.
No, he sees it. He almost is looking at, you know, R. Kelly like that his fame and his talent puts him above God, basically, that he can do no wrong because he is this rich, talented, famous singer. So he's making it seem like, well, you know, you are Kelly, you can do what you want. Like, he's making that excuse for him.
Yeah.
But it also brings up kind of something that I wanted to ask you about.
Okay.
Like, so there's a lot of men enabling R. Kelly in this situation, like,
yeah,
assistants and managers and producers and whomever else, that he's surrounded by like a group of pretty much yes men. Like, his whole posse is there and they all know damn well what he's doing. Like,
right,
they're going to the mall with him to get young girls. They're, after he walks away, going and telling the girl, like, come to this place. Like, they know.
Right.
So no one probably, I guess if they consider themselves a real friend to him, but no one is coming forward and saying, like, I knew this shit was fucked up and I told him this shit was fucked up.
Right.
Like, flat the fuck out.
Right.
So it makes me wonder, like, do...
There was one, the one guy, his road manager.
Yeah.
He made an inkling towards that when he supposedly asked him about Aaliyah. Right, like, are you messing with Aaliyah? And he's like, nah, man, I ain't messing with Aaliyah. But then when it became a thing where he knew he was fucking with Aaliyah, he facilitated where he can get married with her and get the abortion, like, the whole thing.
Well, okay, so here's my question. Is, like, do men check other men? Like, if you had a friend that had this kind of inclination, would you say something to him, or would you just walk away from that friend? Because I know, I'm not even putting that you would enable him out there, because that doesn't even need to be on the table. But, like, realistically, do, in, like, your men friend circle or whatever, you know, even back maybe when you were in college and y'all kind of had, like, a little crew, do you check your boys, like, hey, like, that shit ain't cool?
Okay, so... Here's the thing. When I was younger,
mm-hmm,
like, say, 19, 20, 21,
mm-hmm,
I probably would not have.
Right.
You know, and I think a lot of it was, you know, like, there's definitely a pressure to kind of fit in at that age. And like, you don't want to be ostracized outside of outside of your friend group or whatever.
Yeah.
Fortunately for me, though, I didn't have to, like, do that with anybody I knew for something like this.
Right.
Right? Like, so I wasn't presented with this particular thing at 19, 20, 21, where we were dealing with someone who was, like, clearly underage, and we had to, like, hey, man, what the fuck is it? What is this? Like, what are
yeah,
you doing?
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't a thing. Like, today, it's no question, I'm probably not only am I not going to enable it.
Well, absolutely not.
Not only am I not going to enable it, but, like, me and that dude ain't cool no more. I may end up calling the police on his ass if yeah, I don't fuck him up myself.
Yeah.
And so, like, one of the things I think is, like, this is another thing too that I've been, like, kind of like wrestling with. Like, I know that we have some sort, like, there's a bit of revisionist history, so to speak. And not revisionist history and like how the story gets told. But I think a lot of people sometimes aren't honest with they aren't honest with others, and they aren't honest with themselves and how they feel like they would have responded to this, or they're not telling everybody how they would have responded to this then. Like, there's a thing now where, you know, everybody kind of wakes up woke now.
Yeah.
And so, like, you don't necessarily, they're not honest about their process and how they got to where they are now. Like, they just feel like, well, I've always been here. Like, no, you weren't always here. And this is part of the reason why things like R. Kelly was able to, like, it's kind of how he was able to kind of, like, flourish in that time, because not all of us were thinking this way. It was kind of open. It was open season on, it was open season on the fact that, like, we would allow someone of that stature, of that fame and notoriety, to just kind of operate with a little bit of impunity, so to speak. You look worried. What's up, baby?
No, I'm just trying to understand. Are you saying, like, okay, like, example would be when someone says, okay, I was in an abusive relationship, and the first thing that, you know, another woman would say would be like, couldn't be me, I beat that nigga ass.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm saying that there are people today who would abhor this kind of, like, who don't like what the fuck this is, right?
Yeah.
But they weren't as passionate about it then. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're passionate about it now. Mm-hmm. They weren't as passionate about it then.
Yeah.
But they will portray to you like they've always been passionate about this as they are today.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, at 19, 20, 21, I couldn't get on here and lie and be like, yeah, I you know, because I was listening to the music. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was going to the parties where the music was being played. And, like, I'll never forget where it came home for me. Like, I was on Black Planet. I was on blackplanet.com, and this is where I used to, like, go into, like, the news forums and stuff, and I would, like, kind of go back and forth with people in the news forums, and, like, somebody said to me, well, like, you talk all this stuff about, you know, like, sexual assault and this rape and how you feel about it, but, like, you got all this R. Kelly music on your page.
Uh-oh.
Like, straight up called me out on my shit. And I was like, you know what? You are absolutely right.
Yeah.
You are absolutely right. It was then, it was just like that, where it clicked for me.
Yeah.
Like, you are absolutely right. And old boy who told me this was like, man, I totally, like, thought you were just going to come on some, like, want to argue with me shit. And I was like, nah, bro, you right. And I took all that shit off. I got rid of all of my R. Kelly music and shit. I wasn't listening to R. Kelly, like, all of that. I'm like, because you were absolutely fucking right. And this was probably about 2003. Mm-hmm. You know, like 2003, 2004 sometime.
Well, kind of an example of that from tonight's episodes would be Miss Javante. When they're talking about the Sparkle's niece.
Yeah.
And she, you know, start immediately when she's asked about, you know, the tape and stuff, she is like, she starts crying and she's just like, I love that girl, like, she was my own baby, and this, that, and the other. Well, no, you didn't, because, you know, you have a child now who is that age, and I bet you for sure would not have sat back and let this child that is your baby go in the room with R. Kelly. Like, you were involved, you knew how he was, you previously were just saying the door busts open, R. Kelly was having sex with Aaliyah. Mm-hmm. You knew what the fuck was going on. You were involved in what was going on. Mm-hmm. But if this girl that you love so much, you said you knew what was going on. You were around.
Yeah.
You didn't stop it. You didn't walk away. You didn't bang on the door. You ain't call the police. You ain't call her mama. You ain't tell, like, and saying Sparkle
was like her mom.
Was like her mom.
Yeah.
So you ain't even tell Sparkle that her own niece was out here, like, in the woods. Like, people that do stuff like that, that's like, it's like when someone passes away and all of a sudden, like, oh, that was my best friend, that was my homie, this, that, and the other, I loved him, he was a great person. No, like,
well, I think a lot of that too, like, for all of the people who are around R. Kelly and who are speaking in this particular, like, you know, series, there's a sense of guilt in all of them. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can see it, like, when they sit up and they talk, like, you know, like, you can see there's a sense of guilt in, you know, feeling like, yo, I could have done something. I should have done something. Why didn't I do this? Like, there's that sense of, it's not, it's like that hindsight, you know, that hindsight is 2020. Like, well, I could have did this. I should have did this. But the point of, at this point though, is like, people are looking at you and they already know what has happened, or they have an idea what has happened. And now they're just looking at you like, man, so what the fuck was up with you? You know what I'm saying? And like, that can be, you know, that's some fucked up shit to deal with as well. Not that I necessarily feel sorry for them, but like, that's something to deal with as well. Like, knowing that you were kind of complicit in this sort of shit going on. And I think that's part of the reason why a lot of people don't really feel comfortable having these conversations, even when it comes to just, you know, listening to R. Kelly. Like, people don't want to feel like they're complicit in some bullshit going on. Like, if you tell somebody right now that they're listening to R. Kelly helps him have sex with young girls, they're not trying to hear that shit. They don't see that connection. They're not trying to hear that shit. It like, and then you break it down, like, oh, okay, every time you go to a concert, every time you go buy you know, a CD, or well, people ain't buying CDs no more, but every time you, like, you know, get on Spotify and listen, or get on Apple Music and listen, anytime you, like, you're giving money to him, that kind of facilitates him being able to put these girls in these rooms or get these lawyers so that he can defend himself in court. Like, every time you do this, you're helping facilitate this thing. Like, people aren't making that connection. And so nobody, well, they're not making the connection, only in a sense that I feel like they don't want to.
Right.
I feel like they just simply don't want to, because they want to enjoy the music. They want to, they kind of want to separate him from the music. But the fucked up part about it is he's singing about the shit that he's being accused of.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, when people get to talking that I'm separating the man from the music and all that other shit, I just kind of roll my eyes at their asses.
Well, yeah. I mean, okay. So, a different point. Do you feel bad for Sparkle?
A little bit.
You do?
A little bit.
I can see both sides. Because there's one part of me that, like, yes, this did happen to your family member, but it gets a little muddy, because I feel like in the first two episodes, she kind of said that she knew what was going on and what he was doing. She said that she brought her niece, you know, to the studio with her, had her eyes on her the whole time, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Then, you know, comes back to the studio, sees her niece there alone, but never says, I dragged her out of there by her shirt collar.
Right.
Never says, I call her mom and daddy and was like, what the fuck are y'all doing? Right. Never said anything like that. It just, she just, the documentary itself kind of just jumped to a point where, like, okay, this is the start of the relationship. This is who was in the tape. This is what happened.
Right.
But we don't, I need to know if she fought for her, if she ever said anything. Did she say something to the niece? It seems like she brought her into a situation cautiously, but then kind of like forgot about it, or kind of like let it go. That's what it's coming across as. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think a lot of people are saying, like, girl, you brought this shit on yourself. You introduced this man to your family. This is your fault. You brought the little girl around. But we don't know, and maybe they've edited out when she may have said, and I told R. Kelly, like, blah 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 blah, don't mess with my niece. But it's coming across right now like you brought your niece into the situation and you just kind of left it alone.
Yeah, I definitely see that. I think with Sparkle, I think, of course, there's the guilt. Like, she's crying and stuff, and she's saying, I should have never introduced this man to my family and stuff.
Right.
I think, moreover, though, like, at a certain point, and I don't know if they've actually, like, delved into this, like, in depth in this way, and it hasn't come across this way, but I think at a certain point, like, after the initial introduction, mm-hmm. and supposedly, like, her niece's father is supposedly a part of R. Kelly's band, like whether or not she was continuing to like kind of watch over her, mm-hmm. at a certain point was like a moot point when her parents were also like complicit in having her around, right? So like I know she said that the young girl was like a rapper or something like that, and she had real good talent and stuff, and like R. Kelly saw that she was a really talented rapper and all these other things. But at a certain point, like her family, like she said, she was like estranged from her family, like the whole fucking clan, like for 10 years behind what was going on with this particular situation. And I think because of the way that the family reacted to a lot of these things, like at a certain point as her aunt, if her father and her mom are like cool with what's up, at, you know, like, sometimes folks are just like, well, who am I to say whatever? Even though I would want to protect her, like ultimately her mom and her daddy got, you know, her mom and her daddy has the most say in this particular situation. Right. And we found out like true, even though she's in court testifying that that's my niece, that's him, I know both of them. And the mom and daddy like, no, that ain't her. And the little girl like, that ain't her. And another uncle in the family, that ain't her.
Yeah.
Like, ultimately, it's like, okay.
And so, I mean, I kind of, I want to believe that it's because, like, they were getting paid off.
That was definitely.
And, you know, with as far as, like, the girl's father being in the band and stuff, I want to believe that. I don't think Sparkle came from money, so I'm guessing like they ain't had no money. That, you know, Sparkle probably got him the opportunity or whatever, and then like this is they way out. This is they paycheck or not whatever.
That. I'm sorry, baby. Here's another thing too that I just kind of remember though. I can remember like folks were saying like her, like this girl's dad wasn't really a part of R. Kelly's band. That he only gave him credits on albums because of this particular situation, but that this guy never really was a member of the band, but this is part of the payment was to give this guy credits on albums so that he would get residuals and everything else. I don't know how true that is, but I remember that being sort of like a thing that was talked about around Chicago, was that like, yo, even with that, like, nah, he ain't really in that band, man. Like, they just, that's part of the payoff.
Yeah. Which, I mean, money is a hell of a drug.
Yeah, it is. And the unfortunate part about it is like, yo, this is like, how much is your daughter worth? You know what I'm saying? You, this is what you like. Ultimately, like, you are cool with this payment. And it's not as if you couldn't have gotten justice by any other means. And that's the thing that I think that's one of the things that like pisses me off the most. Cause like, there are times where, you know, when they're like, I remember with this dude, with R. Kelly. There was a lawyer in Chicago who would, they talked about the non-disclosure agreements that R. Kelly was, you know, entering with a bunch of girls around Chicago. Mm-hmm. There was a lawyer in Chicago who damn near her entire practice was getting settlements for women who had been, young girls who had been involved with R. Kelly at some point, or whether or not he had been like, you know, it was a statutory rape thing, or whether or not they were pregnant and he forced them to get abortions, the whole nine. And so, to some degree, some of these women, the only justice that they will get is in the form of some sort of monetary payment. Nobody's going to believe them in a court of law that R. Kelly had to take anything from them, or he had to take an advantage of them or anything. People are going to believe like, oh, it's R. Kelly. You wanted to be with him and this, that, and the other. And here's a case where you do have an opportunity to get some form of justice. This dude can be put, he could be locked up. And you can still, even if you want to go that route, you could still sue this dude or sue his estate or whatever for, you know, civil liabilities for what he did to your daughter.
I mean, yes, but I think looking at all these not guilty, these cases he's coming out not guilty, I think especially after that, people are probably looking at it like, all right, they ain't sending him to jail. They ain't gonna do nothing. The publicity ain't fucking up his career. Give me the check.
Well, when the one reason why I disagree with that is because one of the biggest hangups in the case was the family's refusal to identify that girl as being the person in the tape. And he could have been locked up. Had that family been cooperative with the prosecution, he could have been locked up.
And also,
there were too many people identifying that girl in that tape.
There's also, aside from just the young lady that was in the tape, for all the other women that got settlements, this is something that if you ever watch Law and Order, Olivia Benson is always trying to convince people to testify or to go forward with the charges. Mm-hmm. And the people are always, the victims are like, but what if I don't win?
Right.
This becomes public record.
Right.
If you sign an NDA and take a check, you know, a settlement check, no one will ever know about it. Mm-hmm. And that's way more of a, you know, that's an appealing situation rather than you go to court, you got to testify your whole story, tell all your business and everything that happened, rehash all that, and then the niggas still don't go to jail. But now your name splashed in the papers. Anytime someone look up your name, this is what's going to come up. Like, those, and everybody got to make their own decision. I'm not saying which one is better, but I can see why people are looking at it going like, do I want to go through this? Do I want to go through court? Do I want to put my whole family through this? Or do I just want to get this check and just like try to move on with my life?
Well, I get that. I think there's a distinct difference in this, though, in the fact that there was a tape circulating across the nation.
I'm not talking about the girl that was in the tape. I'm talking about the people who don't have that kind of evidence.
Right. But okay. Because you kind of threw me off with that. Because I'm saying, for this particular case, yo, there's a tape with girl, and there are people who know this girl who are identifying this girl, and the only people who aren't are the people within her immediate family outside of Sparkle who are like, nah, that ain't her.
And her.
Right, and her. Like, nah, that ain't me. And everybody else like, come on, man.
But I think that I don't know. No one knows those people. I don't know if they've come out and said anything. I especially don't think that the person in the tape has come out and publicly said anything. But I can only imagine the amount of money that they were being offered.
Yeah.
And that, and the amount of brainwashing, especially for the girl.
Yeah.
I can only imagine that level of, you know, craziness and stuff. Whatever happened, however much money that she was offered was not enough.
Yeah.
There's no amount that would ever be enough to you know, forgive that situation and what happened.
Yeah. And then there's the aspect of, so you were talking about how, like, a lot of victims they are reluctant to come forward because they're like, okay, so he gets off and my name's out here and everything else. Nobody's going to believe me. And, like, one of the things that, like, stuck out to me tonight was the fact that they actually got one of the jurors from the case to speak to why he, like, voted to not acquit or what, I mean, to vote not guilty. And I got this clip. I'm going to play it real quick.
With women that came out against him and said, I was in an underage relationship with him. He did this to me. He did that.
I just didn't believe them, the woman. I know it sounds ridiculous. The way they dress, the way they act, I didn't like them. I voted again. I disregarded all what they said.
I was happy for them.
All right. Yeah.
What a gross ass motherfucker. Like.
But you know how many people think just like
that? Oh, yeah. I've been blocking and unfollowing plenty of people.
Like.
That think like that.
Like, so many motherfuckers, like, that think like. I clearly think there was a bit of a racial thing going on with that particular guy, like the way that they were dressed, the way that they were talking, like the whole idea that they brought it upon themselves is a bit of an attitude that a lot of folks are still walking around with to this day. Like, people who make excuses for R. Kelly and whatever prominent dude is accused of doing something sexually, you know, wrong. Like, to this day, people will still be like, so why was you at the hotel room with him?
I mean, yeah, and this definitely, especially since this person is a person of color, but a non-black person of color, this really brings into the light, like, the over-sexualization of black people in general. the
black girls in particular.
Yes. And, you know, the black girls, I said this before. I had a cousin who was a baby, and my grandma was talking about, she's thick, you need to cover her up. Mm-hmm. I've been called a fast-tailed little girl in my life. I don't know any black woman that has not ever been called a fast-tailed little girl. Mm-hmm. Like, and was not doing anything, you know, that was...
Get your fast ass in this house.
You know, I had some fast times, but I'm talking about being like 5 or 6, being called like a fast-tailed little girl, or like these kind of things. It's like, people see the beauty of a black woman, and instead of, you know, being able to recognize that beauty, or being able to recognize that they are attractive, being able to recognize our features, automatically it's like, well, gotta be a hoe. Yeah. Must be thinking about sex.
Yeah.
Got some hips, you know, gotta be having sex. Like, okay, no, but
them good childbearing hips, girl.
Yeah. Like
what?
Just, I mean, and even, but you know, when it kind of went into, talking about how pop culture was affected by the tape, talking about like Dave Chappelle's skit and the what is it,
Boondocks?
Yeah, I was gonna say Boone's Farm. I don't know. And then when Boone's Farm. No shade to Boondocks. I like that show, but I can remember when Trapped in the Closet came out.
Yeah,
and just like everyone was talking about it.
Yeah, I remember that.
Every black person was talking about it. Even white people were talking about it. Mm-hmm. Everyone was talking about it. But no one was saying, well, this thing is a molester. No one was saying the rapist R. Kelly came out with this. Everyone was saying, oh, did you see this new? Oh, it's funny. Yeah. Oh, this, oh, he really, like, crazy.
You know, the even crazier part about it to me, though, is that, like, at this particular point, like, people aren't necessarily even denying that it was him. Like,
no.
The vast majority of people knew.
Accepted that it was
him. And accepted that, like, yo, man, R. Kelly, he just kind of like young girls, man. Like, well, you know, that could be you or me. Like, somebody on the radio, like, I think I had that clip. Yeah, like, he was like, that could be you or me. Like, nah, nigga. That's just you.
But I mean, is it just me, or is the creepy black uncle, that's like a running joke within the community of like, but that's not a fucking joke.
It's not a joke.
Because there are hundreds of thousands of people who actually had a creepy uncle that molested them.
I just saw a video earlier today, as I was just kind of perusing fucking Facebook threads and shit. And somebody posted a video on that was on YouTube of this young girl. She might have been 13 or 14, where she secretly taped her mother's boyfriend feeling her up in the car.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm watching this, like, ready to, like...
Yeah.
I mean, it's my computer, so I didn't. But I wanted to, like, punch the fucking screen.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, dude, what the fuck are you doing?
Or even, what's that movie in Split?
Split,
where the young girl, like, her dad died, and then her uncle was, I mean,
and she ended up having to go live with him.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like a widely known, widely kind of talked about thing. But like the creepy black uncle is like part of like the diaspora. Like, it's part of like the culture. Yeah. It's like a joke to people. But every time people joke like that, I just think, like, gosh, someone is sitting here who is either being molested by their uncle, who has been molested, you know.
And he's boys, still invited to Thanksgiving. He's still invited to fucking Christmas. He's still invited to Easter. He's still invited to all the family picnics. Nobody just, like, hey, man, nah, we can't fuck with you.
Like, nobody just does like, that. Oh, shit. No, don't leave the kids.
Just don't
alone
leave the
around,
kids with
them.
Yeah.
You know, him, you know, just. You know, let him go in the back with the men.
Y'all know Harold over there. Go get them kids. Harold back there.
Yeah,
go
like
get them kids.
But nobody's calling 911. Nobody's, you know.
Right.
I won't even get into family dynamics and personal things. But it's just crazy to me that that's like a running joke. That's like part of the thing. And then how R. Kelly and him peeing on this this girl and raping her became like a running joke.
Yeah.
And I understand, you know, just like we don't, no one, well, people get mad about Saturday Night Live poking fun at like real life political issues and topics. But like, we sat here and all like probably fell out our chairs laughing at this mm-hmm. Dave Chappelle singing, "I Want to Pee on You." Mm-hmm. Like we said, like as a community, mm-hmm. we thought that shit was funny as fuck. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not a joke. This is not something to be joked about.
And that goes back to the point that I was making earlier about like, is, you know, we talk about this, we need to talk about it. Honestly, like everybody just wasn't at this point then.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like we gradually got to this point, but this wasn't always how everybody felt and how everybody like, you know, thought about these things. You know, you kind of grew into this. I mean, this.
Have you heard about like, okay, there's a whole thing now of like two things that I have heard a lot about is NDA culture, the non-disclosure agreement culture. And there's like a lot of people who you would think are like D-list celebrities, like people on Bravo that like have you sign NDAs before coming into their house. Mm. And a lot of it is like, I've heard like NeNe Leakes has had people sign NDAs like before coming to her house because like, they just don't want you telling what was in their house or whatever. I'm assuming not because anything creepy was going on, right. But there's a lot of rappers and athletes and stuff like that, that like they're having people sign NDAs cause they're doing fucked up shit in their house.
Right.
And, the other thing that now is a big thing is like this whole culture of like canceling people, getting people to fuck up out of here. Mm-hmm. That's like a huge thing now that I can't remember in high school. Like I can't remember that being a thing. I can't remember like in the early 2000s, people being canceled. Mm-hmm. I feel like things happen. People did fucked up things. And then like we forgave. But nowadays it's like, you could wake up and say the wrong thing on Twitter and all of a sudden you're canceled.
Well, I feel like this. I think that there is definitely, like, with the social media aspect of everything, there's definitely people going to be in your ass, right? Yeah. People going to get in your ass, especially if, like, you say something fucked up, you do something fucked up, people going to get in your ass.
Yeah.
But I also think that depending on who that person is would depend on whether or not that person gets, quote-unquote, canceled or not. Because truth be told, a lot of the people that you think got canceled are still out here working.
Oh, yeah. Chris Brown's still out here.
Are still out here, like, you know, making movies, making music, being on TV shows. You might not necessarily support them anymore, but somebody is.
Yeah.
So, for the time being, and I think this has been, like, I think social media has kind of amplified this a bit. Yeah. But there's always been, you know, like, you had, like, he had, like, R. Kelly, he had, you know, crisis fucking managers and stuff like that. This has kind of always been a thing. When something big happened or you fucked up really bad, people was in your ass. And then after a while, it would go away. You can go right back to doing the exact same shit that you were doing. Like, take, for instance, that guy, what's my man's name? The dude who made the movie.
Harvey Weinstein?
No, not Harvey Weinstein. Nate Parker, who made the Birth of a Nation movie by Nat Turner.
Yeah.
Like, people talked about canceling him, but, like, that dude is still working. He's not necessarily doing anything as big as he was before.
Yeah.
But he's still working. You know, like, shit. I'm drawing a blank right now. But, like, there are plenty of examples of people who have been, quote-unquote, canceled, who are back out here doing exactly the same shit that they were doing before. They just don't have the same amount of profile that they had. Controversy.
I think there are more people than, especially there may have been like 10 years ago, that actually did get canceled and were actually affected by what the fuck they did. I mean, take into consideration also, not just like celebrities, like people, white people that have been caught saying some racist shit or doing fucked up shit, mm-hmm. like people will find where you work at, mm-hmm. cancel your check, like you're done.
Yeah.
They will run you up on out of here.
I had to tell Walt that on Beer and Chicken. He was like, yo, if you say something on here, don't nobody care. I'm like, actually, nigga, if I say something fucked up, niggas will try to find out where I work. You know what I'm saying? Yes. And fuck up my money. Like, they'll try to go.
People will try to find where you live.
People have done that to me.
Well, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, people went on, like, you know, when I used to do the show on Facebook. I mean, not Facebook, YouTube. And, like, put up one of my old addresses. Like, yeah. while I was doing the show. Like, I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah.
It was an old address, but still, like, yo, motherfuckers was out here trying to dox me mid-show.
Yeah.
You know, so like, that's a thing. But for a celebrity, I just feel like ultimately, depending on the transgression.
Yeah. And depending on their level of celebrity. And depending on the level of celebrity.
Like, some folks aren't. Folks aren't necessarily being canceled as much as social media would like to believe it. Like, because there's a level of, and this is something I've said too. With social media, we've been given this sense of intimacy with a lot of these celebrities and shit, where we feel like we can now talk to them. You know, we can say things to them. We say things to them that we wouldn't necessarily say to anybody. Like, you know, kill yourself. All this other like crazy shit that people say to people on social media that they wouldn't say to anyone's faces. But I think it's given us access to these celebrities in ways that we didn't have before.
Yeah.
And so now people feel more empowered that they, like, you know, like, well, if you don't say the right thing, or if you don't do the thing that I want you to do in this particular moment of time, we getting you out of the paint.
I mean, it also, it...
And I don't know if I'm articulating that right.
But. It allows people to know that they are not alone in whatever they're feeling.
Right.
So
it can definitely be used for good.
If something happens to you or you witness something, now you post it on social media
and everybody knows.
Everybody can see it. And then all of a sudden you feel like, yes, this was fucked up, because people keep coming and they're agreeing with me, and you're empowered in kind of in standing up for yourself.
Yeah.
So like it has, you know, some tiny bits are good, but mostly bad.
Yeah, I know Babe ain't really a big fan of this.
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation.
But
the last thing I kind of want to discuss, Geronda.
I was just getting ready to get to that.
Okay, I just want to say right now, we're doing this. It's like,
what time is it? It's 12:58.
Okay, so we just watched, and then like we kind of prepared, came back and got shit set up. And then, so we're doing this show, you know, right after the world has seen the show. You know, we watched it live with everyone else. So, I don't know about you, but I have, like, every person that's name came across the screen, I, like, tried to find their social media, because I wanted to know what they felt and what they were saying about it. All of the victims, at least.
Yeah.
So, Geronda's is pretty much the most active one that came up. I think Lizette...
Lizette Martinez.
Yeah, she was on. She has a social media, but she's not very active on social media. But Geronda, pretty much was live tweeting, and it has since erased a lot of her tweets. But Geronda is obviously going through something and has posted, you know, thoughts. She's having suicidal thoughts and stuff like that because of the criticism and the judgment that she's getting. So like, if you search right now in under the surviving R. Kelly hashtag, there are a lot of people that are judging her. Like, in my notes, I just wrote, Geronda, sis, what the fuck? Because like, that's the immediate... When she starts telling her story of, like, she met R. Kelly by going to the trial, and then, like, she had a single mom, so her mom didn't know. She was going to his house. Like, all of these things and, like, how it happened. You're like, so you lied about your age. So, obviously, it's your fault. But, no, she was still a child. She made a childish decision to lie about her age. She made a childish decision to skip school. And to go to this man's trial, she made a childish decision to go to this man's house unaccompanied. Like, she was doing childish things. She was a child. So, I just want to say that, like, as much as, like, we may talk about this stuff when we're talking about social media, we're talking about all these people, we're talking about celebrities, you have to realize that just because these people are on TV does not mean that they're celebrities. None of the people that were involved in this, other than, like, obviously, like, cameramen, production crew, whatever... These people that are the victims, they didn't get paid to do this.
Right.
They were asked to be involved and stepped up, and they decided to be involved. So she's not, I don't think, you know, of course there's always like a hint of like, did you come on this show to get your name out and to, you know, get some fame off this, get your 15 minutes? But it's like, would you really want to get your 15 minutes of saying that like you were raped by R. Kelly? Like, well,
you know, and that's something that every victim of a famous person gets confronted with.
Yeah.
Like when those 50 some odd women came out against Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
One of the prevailing arguments against them was, oh, they just trying to get rich and famous. You know, they was trying to get rich and famous. That's why they coming out now. And it's like, could you name anybody who got rich and famous off of being a victim of sexual assault? Like, yeah. can anybody name anybody who's made it like, oh, I'm big now because I got raped by R. Kelly? Like, no, nigga, that's not how this works. So, like, there's a lot of that. I found myself while I was watching Geronda's story. I sat there because, like, again, like I said, as we watch this, is like, you know, hold my beer because this shit about to get worse.
Yeah.
And I was checking myself a lot.
Yeah.
Sitting there listening to that and watching it, I was checking myself because, like, I had a lot of the same reactions. Like, damn. So you go into this trial where
as a fan,
and it was a bunch of young ladies and, like, you know, yelling out, it wasn't him. Y'all need to leave R. Kelly alone. Like,
yeah.
And there's still some of those people today. But, like, you go into a trial where this dude he's on trial for child pornography. You're in the courtroom, apparently. Like, they were allowing her to.
Yeah, it was open to the public.
And that was another thing, too. Like, this is the part where I think, like, police out here fucking up, not doing their jobs. Like, at first I was like, man, how come her mama didn't know this girl was skipping school every fucking day to go to this trial? And then I'm like, yo, what? She's there. The police is there, too. Like, why ain't the police like, why you not in school? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm thinking that sort of shit. But then I'm like, okay, she said she was a freshman in high school, which means she was probably 14 years old.
No, I don't know, because she said she was 16.
Okay, so maybe she
she said she was 16 at the time and said that she was 19. Right,
but she also said that she was a freshman in high school.
It doesn't matter. She may have been, you know, she may have been left behind or something.
Exactly. So again, you're kind of making a point for me in the sense that she wasn't really as with it as we would have assumed most people would be. You know what I'm saying? Like, cause like, okay, she said she's a freshman in high school. She's going to this trial. She's there every day. She's a super fan, all these other things. And she's getting a chance to talk to him. And, you know, she got a phone call from him. I believe she said she got like a phone call from him and he invited her out to a party and, you know, bring a bathing suit and
the whole
shit about, and then it became, you know, you refer to me as daddy from here on out, like that sort of shit. And I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, at that point, doesn't it sound familiar to you? Because these are some of the things that you probably should have heard during the trial. But I'm also, okay, because you may be like, nah, I don't know about that. But I'm also thinking this is also a child still. And that's why I had to keep checking. Like, no, she's a kid. She's a kid. I kept bringing it back to she's a kid. And ultimately the responsibility of what happened between him and her was on him, but it was just odd, man. It just didn't sit right with me that, like, even after going through that trial, she still was on some, but it's R. Kelly though. But I had to check myself quite a few times listening to her tell her story.
All right. So, during when, Geronda was telling her story, I had to remind myself that she described herself as a super fan.
Right.
I cannot relate to that. And I think maybe the reason why it's so hard for both of us to understand, just kind of going with whatever someone says because they're famous is because I personally cannot think of anyone that I would be that pressed about. I'm not a super fan of anyone or anything that, you know, any famous person. I just am not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're also the type of person that you may be a super fan of something, but if you don't want to do something, you're not going to do it. You don't, and you also do not like for people to tell you what to do.
No.
So,
no.
I mean, even if you were a super fan of someone, if they tell you to do some bullshit, you're going to be like, all right, bye. You know? So I had to keep reminding myself that she described herself as a super fan, and super fandom is a thing. That is, people really worship these celebrities.
Yeah.
Especially kids.
Yeah.
Children. Young girls. Because yeah. I'm thinking back to like Scream Tour days when like people was falling out because of Lil Bow Wow.
Shit, I think back to now, like when Kimaya talks about her love of Trey Songz.
Well, yeah.
I'm like, ah, shit.
Yes. But so that's what I was really thinking about is like, okay, put yourself in the mind of someone who is obsessed. Someone who is like, she pretty much was like, I worshipped him. I thought he was like the greatest thing ever, right? Mm-hmm. So her coming to the house and stuff, of course she's going to be excited. Of course. She's getting invited to her favorite, you know, celebrity's house. You know, then him telling her, which she said, you know, and then he told me to call him daddy and she was like, okay, and hung up the phone. It was just like, she would pretty much have done anything. He would have said jump off a bridge and she probably would have did it.
Right.
Because she was a super fan.
Right.
Also a child.
Right.
So that was, that anchoring myself in that kind of made me able to like, to not judge her so harshly. Mm-hmm. But I did have to check myself from when she said I was 16 and I lied and said I was 19. I'm like, oh, okay. So you wrong. You know what I'm saying? Like, but like I said on the previous episode, I did the same shit. I was 14, lying to people telling them I'm 16 and 17. Like, that's something a lot of girls did. A lot of people did that. Mm-hmm. And lying to impress someone that you're a super fan of and that you're obsessed with and you're attracted to, feasible. I can see how that happened.
Oh, I definitely saw it as feasible. I can definitely see how that
happened. The thing, I mean, and people are now saying she was, she is... People are guessing that she's the author of the anonymous book that came out about R. Kelly. Okay. Because her testimony, what she was saying was like, quote, pretty much quoted directly from it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't have any proof of that. Wasn't about to go look up the book or anything like that to find out. But what struck me the most about her was how young she looks still.
Yeah.
And how she still looks and speaks like a child. Mm-hmm. Just... that was striking to me. Like, I couldn't get it out of my head. I couldn't stop looking at her as like a child. Like, so are you 16 still? Are you 19? What happened? Like, I'm not prepared to hear what comes next for her, which a lot of people are already alluding to, you know, her having a miscarriage and her getting herpes, whatever. I'm just not prepared.
Yeah.
That was a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, like just listening to her story, it was fucked up. Listening to like fresh off of being on trial for child pornography, like fresh off it, like let's just think of the audacity of that to be on trial for the very shit that you like, but he's still checking out these young girls, and as soon as the trial is over, right back to the same shit.
Yeah,
like, oh man. Yeah, so I know they're going to talk about in the, I guess this is parts 5 and 6 and like the finales of this. Yeah. They're going to kind of delve into the sex cult portion of R. Kelly's story. Is there anything in this particular part of the series that like it sounds weird to say, like looking forward to.
Okay, but... I feel very much like this is the part where it can go really, really well, and it can keep going. Like the tone of the seriousness of this documentary can continue, mm-hmm. or we're gonna jump the shark.
You think we're gonna jump the shark?
I think it can go Dream Hampton kind of serious. Documentary type of way, or it can go Mona Scott, because of the way that it's being discussed, mm-hmm. and because of the reality of the situation, because it's right now, because mm-hmm. we're following someone doing something, doing some action. It's not just the one of the mothers is not just in the studio sitting here. We're following her to a hotel where her daughter is, where R. Kelly might be. Now it's like we're like almost on like cheaters cam. There's camera people running. There's all this going on.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel like it can go one good way or it can go one really, really bad way.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that they handle it still with like sensitively and they're still like classy about it and it's still like a serious situation. I'm just hoping, I don't want to see, you know, the cameraman and the producer egging this woman on to cry in the elevator. I don't want to see that. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, I want it to keep being like a serious, well put together thing.
Well, one of the things I think I'm most concerned about going into like 5 and 6 is like the judgmental part.
Yeah.
Right? Because the parents are going to now be like the parents who have women or, you know, young girls who are involved with R. Kelly now mm-hmm. or most recently. There's going to be a lot of people. You know, just like just talking about the social media aspect of it, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be watching this and like, man, y'all knew what the fuck this was and y'all still let y'all daughters get over there. Y'all like, there's going to be a bunch of that. And that's the thing that I feel like we're going to get a lot of that tomorrow.
I think also the thing about the hard thing about this whole thing that's going on right now is these girls are 18.
Yeah.
And old. They're like 18 to 20. I don't think anyone's like, you know, grown-ass woman status, but I think they're like 17, 18, 19. So these girls are of age. And I think that's where it gets tumultuous because, like, when in the little, you know, sneak peek or, like, what's to come,
right.
It was like, they went to go and get her, but she's 18. She's the legal age, so no legal action was taken.
Right, we already had one mother say that.
That's where it kind of gets a little hairy, is that, like, what are we really going to see? Because it ain't like we about to, you know what I'm saying, set R. Kelly up and Chris Hansen about to be in the room, like, what the fuck, what's good? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's going to be a lot of, like, slam doors and, like, what's really going to happen? Like, I don't understand how they're going to really pull that off and why. And also, I feel like that in itself could have been its own thing.
Yeah.
Because what's been happening thus far is very, like, testimonials, real facts, important, you know, respected people, doctors, psychiatrists coming in, putting this kind of timeline together. But now we're switching gears into kind of a more reality TV type of setting of, like, what's happening now. I just don't really, I feel like that honestly, people would watch that. That could be its own thing. Yeah. I thought it was going to be its own thing when this came out, like, I guess it was a couple years ago, and there was the girls that came, you know, they had been put on video saying, like, I'm fine, leave me alone, blah, blah, blah. People were talking about whether they were coerced, like, all that. I thought it was going to be its own thing then. So that's, I mean, I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah. So, yo, we've been going for a little while here, babe. It's getting late. This has been episode number 9 of the Baywatch podcast. We will talk to you guys tomorrow. Tomorrow it is. So until next time, fam. Peace.